Hey Jeff. Daz, how you doing, my man?
Good God, how are you?
Good.
Right. Jeff, my man. Looking good, mate.
Hey, how's
Going
it going?
I'm good, mate.
Yeah, sorry, I'm driving, so I have it propped up on the dash here, so.
You chill, man. You focus on the road, man. We'll keep you entertained in the background. Yeah, just there's a few more
Sounds good.
people in. Des, how's the news? Sorry, brother. You okay?
Yeah, good. I don't think I've spoken since Costa Rica. How was it?
Yeah, mate, it was fantastic. It was a good time. Good couple of weeks.
Yeah, pretty jealous.
Next one, mate. Clarky's in as well. Look out. Twice so far in a week. I'll probably get you on the Saturday one as well, mate.
For sure.
We got Thompson in. Jeffrey's in as well. We got two Jeffs in. Jeffrey, good to see you, brother. Nice little backdrop there.
Good evening. Fake Italy. Everyone likes fake Italy.
Yeah. He's looking good, mate. Thompson, how are you, man?
Sorry, my audio wasn't working for a second. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. How did legs go today?
Oh, I did it yesterday. I powered through it, actually.
Feel good?
Yeah, all good.
New additions
Full day
feel
today.
well. Paul's in as well. I think we've got Scott coming in too. Mr. White is in the house. There he is.
Hello there.
Good to see you, sir.
Nice to see you, of course.
Looking well, mate. Looking well.
Looking
Boys,
better.
this is go on, Scott. Sorry, man.
Looking better.
To rub it in. So we're just letting a few more people in. Whilst we're waiting, why don't we go through I'm gonna pick one or two of you out. I want to see some hear some wins from you from this week or the past couple of weeks. And anybody else that's achieved anything in the meantime, like really well. Jeff, you keep driving, don't you worry about typing anything in that inbox, all right? You keep folks on the road, bro. Yeah, just give us a few wins in the chat as well. Anything that's gone well in this last week. Des, why don't you just give me an update on what's gone well for you since Christmas, man?
Play was pretty disciplined over the Christmas period. So I never really went off piste. Maybe one day I went off piste, but besides that, pretty solid. You're continuing to get stronger in the squat, so that's exciting. Mobility is improving. So yeah, it's pretty good. Just starting to add weight.
Good man. So that's so the squat's a bit a big lift for you to start to look to improve, yeah?
Yeah, it's kind of. I've always been uncomfortable in the bottom of the squat with my Celtic pelvis, so kind of getting pretty comfortable there now. So just being able to sit in that position now has been pretty good because it was just such a horrible thing to do, is just be in that position. But now it feels comfortable, so
Yeah.
the big weight off the shoulders.
Just spending time there, yeah?
Yeah.
So how many times a week are you hitting it?
I was squatting 3 times a week. That was barbell squat, but we're doing like Bulgarian split squats, lunges, cable split squats. So it's a lot. It's based around split squats and squats. So it's pretty brutal at times, but it's good to enjoy it.
Mate, the split squats are game for sure,
Yeah.
especially the Bulgarian ones.
Yeah.
There's a lot of memes going around at the moment on social media with all these I think it's is it President Bush? He's like doing this smirky grin and stuff, and all I'm seeing is memes with him doing this grin, this little chuckle.
I've seen that one.
The coach just programming his Bulgarian split squats for his client, and there's George Bush is juggling in the background. That's all I'm getting on my feeds. Good man, good to hear. Robert, give us an update, man. What's gone well for you so far this past week or so?
For me, I've been working on a sort of body composition phase with Andrew, and I've dropped down into the 100 kilo mark for the first time in about 6 years for me.
Love it, man.
My first time down from a high of about 117 kilos, more recently about 112 since I was working with Andrew. Down targeting 98 kilos, and then we'll start doing a bit more of a getting back into some bulking.
Love it, man. Love it, man. So you, what's the long-term goal for you?
The first for me was to get the body fat right down. So I probably snuck up to about, low 20s, 22% body fat. And I've just been sitting there stagnant for probably a couple of years and really struggling to shift it. So it was to get lean again. So I'm down to about 16% now, chase that down a little bit more, get to a target weight of about 98, and then start just incrementally ratcheting back up the strength training, the hypertrophy.
Beautiful, mate. Good stuff. Good stuff. So, Bill, good to see you, man.
Yeah, how are you?
Good, wait. Good, mate. Doing well. We got Coach Steve in the house as well. The big man's on the treadmill. And any sweet potatoes for later, I suppose.
Just for
In
the record,
there.
my pants are right off. Just so you'll never know if I'm being serious.
I
I'm
wouldn't expect
gonna put
anything
that in
less
your
than
mind.
that. Love it. So, boys, we've started this year off with, and I'm sure you've maybe watched the other replays back, or maybe on been on call last week with Dan and maybe Greg the week before. But we've been starting off with lifestyle optimization, right? So, looking at how we're implementing nutrition into that, looking how like the mindset goes into that as well. And obviously, my favorite topic is always programming and training. And how to optimize training around your specific lifestyle, right? So, and what I wanted to pick up on this call as well, more so, was that sometimes life kicks us in the backside sometimes, and we can't stick to the perfect scenario plan, right? So it might be the best split in the world, it might be the best laid out program, and all of a sudden we get kicked up the ass with something that we don't expect. And how are we going to plan that out through the week then? So we have to have plan A, which is a great thing to go and attack, and that's the plan that we need to do. But then we also might need a plan B or even a plan C sometimes, right? So it's picking the brains out of that and saying, well, what is going to be optimal for the lifestyle that's one is my A lifestyle, and then two, when life kicks me up the backside and I've got to go with my plan B lifestyle as well. So how does that look on your calendar? So you'll notice that, well, I'm sure the guys on this call that work with myself, Thompson, Scott, Chris, you boys will see that I like to work with a 16-hour audit on what your day is going to look like. And for some clients, I've got a 16-hour audit for 7 days a week, A. And then sometimes it's like a 16-hour audit for 7 days a week, the plan B, because some people travel extensively. Chris Thompson, Scott, you travel quite a little bit here and there as well, but more so I'm thinking more the clients that travel for work, right? So like heavy work schedules. What does that look like when you have to think about training on the road? And you, let's say for example, this is an actual true life example. At home for one of my clients, he'll train push pull legs style split. I'm sure a few of you on this call right now have tried that with me, and then I like to alternate phase to phase based off what I want to achieve with that client. But let's say, for example, it's getting bigger and stronger. I like to alternate with push-pull legs style splits, alternate with upper-lower splits where we go into heavier base loading. So we can really optimize recovery. We can really optimize volume, and we alternate between both. So we're always touching one or the other. That's like perfect example. But when he travels, that's impossible. So that means I now need to look at a different type of training split for that person to allow the frequency of targeting the muscles that we want to improve, keep the frequency on strength, keep the frequency on skill acquisition. So all of those things need to be in place, right? So we have different splits that we're going to use based off the scenarios that are going to come in, So sorry, boys. I'm trying to let people into the room as well at the same time as going through this. Everyone's popping up on the top of the screen. We've just had some more through. I think we've got Andrews in. Guys, if you can open up your videos as well. Chaz, nice to see you, man. If you've got your videos off, and just so I can see your faces, and if you've got any questions as we go through this as well, feel free to unmute yourself. Because I might not be able to get a look through the chat, and I want to see everybody as well. So based off that little example that I've given you there, show of hands, yes, no in the comments. How many of you have come up with that type of issue where you want to go through a specific split or you're going through a specific training split and all of a sudden life's kicked you off the backside and you go, do you know what? I can't frequently get into the gym at this rate, or I can't perform at this level, right? Raise your hand if you've ever been through that so far. Yeah, of course. And how do you feel when that happens? I'd be interested to know. Do you feel like not so much a failure, but it's like, am I going to achieve what I set out to achieve if I can't stick to this perfect split? Does
Yeah,
that
I
ever end?
generally feel off, like off my game. You know, I traveled for work a couple of weeks ago. I was in India, and so one hotel had an okay gym, and the other one was an absolute disaster. So it was just like it's kind of threw off my entire day, aside from the jet lag and everything else that comes with the trip that way. But I feel off, and I don't often have a plan B. For example, the reason I wanted to join this call was kind of understand like what does that look like given the changes, right? I've got young kids. Sometimes my son wakes up a couple times at night. You know, he's 4, and that just throws a monkey wrench and everything because I don't have the energy to get up at 5 a.m. to get my normal workout in. But when I'm traveling for work, the hotel gym situation is just an absolute disaster, right? You typically there's a treadmill, but other than that, you have no guarantee of what's going to be there. So I struggle with the weightlifting aspects, and do I try to overtrain a couple of days before to try to give my body time to recover? I just don't make time for that most of the time.
Yeah, so let's actually, this is a great little case study to unpack, right? Because this could be a prime example for everybody too. So actually run me through that scenario, Bill, where you thought, well, should I really train and kick my own ass for it? Is that where you just get out there where you really go at it and then you take a couple of days off to recover and then you like 4 days later or 5 days later you go at it again? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so what I try to do is what I try to do in this case, right? I went to India right off of Christmas break, so I had a little bit of extra time. So I did, my standard chest shoulders routine in the morning, and then that evening I would hit legs, and just try to kind of double up because I knew that it was going to take me 30 hours to get there, and I knew it was going to be a couple of days of downtime, and then. That cured me for probably 2 days, and then after that, I was trying to figure out, okay, now what do I do? Because I feel recovered, but I don't know. I don't have access to the right equipment. The dumbbells went up to like 11 pounds. You know, it was awful in that second place.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. So how long were you in India for? How many days?
I was there for 7 days.
Okay. So in this case, so this is like a good hotel based thing. Like this will happen. This happened to me as well. So I'll pull Steve into this as well because he might have some great insights too. But I'll share my thoughts on that. I'll bring Steve in too. But if I ever travel where I think I always try and plan where I'm going to train. That's one of my things when I go away. I'll look at where I'm staying, and in that whatever mile radius of my gym, of my hotel, I'll be looking for gyms that I can maybe access, or am I within 10, 15 minutes of an Uber ride away from that, right? So I'm always thinking, plan ahead, schedule that out. So I'm looking at those things straight away. So for example, if myself and Ben are teaching ever, we always get an Airbnb, so we're in control of our food. And we always, typically we're teaching at a gym, so it helps, but we'll always look for another gym that may be a little bit of an improvement on the one we're teaching in, right? So we've always got a backup to go with. So it's just planning ahead in those cases. Now, what if we do have 10-pound dumbbells and maybe only body weight to play about with for those few days, right? So in those cases, we got two scenarios we could play. So if we are still looking, let's say hypertrophy is the goal. So if we are still looking to touch that to a certain element, we do know mechanical tension is the main driver of hypertrophy, 100%. But if I'm traveling, I always tend to pack blood flow restriction cuffs. So the reason I do that is if I do have only light weights to play about with, then I'll typically attach blood pressure cuffs to my arms and my legs. When I'm doing lower body stuff, obviously it won't be on my legs, upper body be on my arms. You can't do it on your chest and your lats or anything like that, obviously. But if you're doing arms, it's great, or delts even. And typically what it's going to do, it's going to prevent blood getting back into the muscle. So you're occluding the muscle. So what you're getting then is a buildup of metabolic byproducts. So you're creating a very sticky environment. And typically what tends to happen, those metabolic byproducts get attached to the actin and myosin heads of the muscle. So basically the things that create the contraction and do this with the muscle, they're reliant on something called actin and myosin. So they cause contractions. As the metabolic byproducts get stuck to those heads, it causes sticky environments and it slows down the contraction, which is essentially the mechanical tension we're trying to get from heavier weights, but you can get it from lighter weights. So this is where you have to obviously play about with the blood flow and things like that. That's typically what I would run with if I've got very light weights. Now, the other scenario could be where you're using body weight. I would do unilateral stuff and I would do change the angles that you're playing with, where you're using the angle and leverage of body weight, where it's the toughest place to go. So for example, if you can do push-ups, well, you might start doing push-ups for more of the delts and the incline of the upper chest with your feet up on the wall. So you're doing like one of those CrossFit handstands. So John would be very good at this type of stuff with a handstand, kipping shoulder press push-ups, right? Up against the wall. But you can angle that so you can hit the upper fibers of the chest as well. So it's leveraging your body in positions like that that's going to make it very tough for you. And then obviously the only other thing we can play with then is tempo, like giving you pauses, giving you concentric pauses here and there, like things like that we can play with to really challenge the muscle. Is it optimal? No. Like obviously heavier weights are going to be way more optimal. But in those cases, in those scenarios, you're still going to be able to allow the frequency of training to still occur, to not allow atrophy to occur from the muscle. That makes sense. That's my sort of two cents on it. I mean, Steve, you might have any other little gems for us to play about with here as well.
Well, you covered a lot of it, man. Like, I think that there's a couple of different strategies I throw at you or anybody who's doing that. But the biggest thing I've actually done, because again, same thing over here, kids like wake me up and then like training may change or something, right? And what I've realized is that if like the past week's training's been okay, then it's never not a good time to take a day off. That's fine. Because if anything, you're gonna get a bump in performance later on. So training becomes more of what you're saying, Gav, in terms of just mitigating atrophy, as long as you're getting some stuff. And it's pretty amazing how little you have to really do in order to make sure that actually doesn't happen. Like you're saying, just doing some push-ups, doing some squats, tempo-controlled positional work can be really beneficial. And it's a good time to almost take advantage of the things that you've been avoiding. Because I promise you, 90% of people on this call right now are not doing their aldoas. So do some aldoas. Like that kind of stuff that people normally wouldn't do, do it. Because it's going to give you that that moment where like you don't have an opportunity to go hit, you know, 200-pound dumbbells. So sit down, do the aldoas. Do the yoga, do the poses, work on mobility, because there's always a silver lining in it. Another thing I've thought a lot about is employing almost like a ceiling and a floor mentality with yourself. Like the ceiling would be the absolute awesome best case scenario. It'd be hitting your workout based on the exact plan of, let's say, Coach Gab gave you, and then macros tracked, weighed, everything is perfect, right? But the floor is I make sure that I still keep a diary. And I make sure that I get 30 minutes intentional movement. So the floor is what you're absolutely bare, like, you know, bare none, you're committing to 100%. And that has to happen. Because sometimes, most of the time without a plan, people just don't do it. Because they'll be like, I'm going to try. A lot of times I've heard from people saying, I'm just going to try to get a workout in. It's like, well, guys, we all have walls and we all have floors. Start doing some squats. Just do it. Set a timer. Do it. It's not very hard. It just comes down to the fact that you just don't have to plan it, right? So if that's your floor, saying, I will do 30 minutes or even sell yourself short sometimes, that's pretty powerful too. Like, say 5 minutes. The second you do 5 minutes of intentional movement, you'll realize that it was actually not very hard. It was just your brain playing with you. And then you sold yourself short. Now you're like, oh, 5 minutes? I'll do 10. But if you automatically think, like, the worst case scenario, it's hard. Yeah, so I would just say, again, the ceiling and floor is really powerful. Because for me, like, my ceiling is obviously, like, track macros, 12,000 steps a day, making sure I hit my workout, progress my workout, hit all my foods, no junk food. So that's pretty steep ceiling, right? But my floor is, don't sit on my ass all day. Make sure I take a walk and make sure that I have protein every meal. That's my floor. And so I'm never not going to hit that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And the other thing to consider too, Bill, is like, if we're really looking to maximize a goal, then yeah, you might want to hit that frequency through the week and making sure that we're getting that optimal amount of training stimulus that we want, right? So remember, it's going to take you, if you obviously train optimally, it's going to take around, ideally, you want to hit that body part 2 to 3 times a week if you're going to maximize hypertrophy. Like if you're hitting it once a week on a bro split, you're going to have to do so much volume in that session to allow yourself to still grow by the time you hit it again the next week. And you can grow for sure doing it, but it's so minimal compared to 2 to 3 times a week. So we're looking at obviously training frequency 2 to 3 times a week. So straight away, you're going to bring yourself to 2 times a week, going to be an upper lower split, or the push pull legs modified upper lower split that I use, that I enjoy. And the reason I and this is where my lifestyle allows this as well, by all, and this is where the lifestyle thing comes in. Just raise your hand. You don't have to do the emoji stuff. Raise your hand if you can. How many of you love to go to the gym and train with weights? Okay. This is why I do a 5-day push-pull leg split, right? Because I'll do a push-pull and then a legs day. I'll take a day off and then I'll do a push with some arms, and then I'll do, and delts are in there as well. And I'll do back and legs on my last day. That for me is like an admit, like I love training with weights and I want to be in the gym as much as possible doing that. And the way I schedule the training volume out of that, it allows me to still recover to maximize performance as optimally as every week as I can. And then I'll alternate with the upper lower split as well. So I'll go in and out of strength work. Now, what that allows me is still, even though I'm going 5 days, I still hit every body part twice a week. So I'm still getting that optimal frequency there. Now, the other, if you're going to go even higher, 3 to 4 times a week, full body, you'll hit way more frequency of the muscle, right? So depending on how you like to train, the type of training session that you can really, really maximize and really tap into here psychologically is going to be the best one for you, right? But your lifestyle has to play into that. I've got some guys that are like, I can only get to the gym to train with weights 3 times a week. Some guys, they need more conditioning elements in there as well, which means that brings us back down lower amounts of training through the week because we have to up-level the cardiovascular work as well. So that'll dictate exactly how many weight training sessions you're going to get to. That'll dictate how much volume and how much intensity you're going to go with. So the split will dictate all of those things. So that's where we've got to build lifestyle in. So going back to what you were saying with India and so on, when you think about the amount of time it's going to take you to go back to square one with the muscle you've grown, even though you do get atrophy specifically through the week, right? It's going to take you about 30 days to go back to square one with muscle loss. It'll take you about 3 to 4 weeks. So even like, so missing a few days in India maybe wouldn't have set you back as much as people think. And people freak out with that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, to get to lose all of your strength gains too, alongside that takes even longer. It's about 3 months. So missing a few days because you're traveling isn't the biggest, like, oh my God, I'm going to lose all my muscle. It's just not going to happen. So in those cases, BFR might be your best friend. You get to train at a different rep range. You get to challenge your mental and testicular fortitude for a little bit if you're doing very high reps and you got to take it the way you got to take it. And the pain, like the other thing as well, is like pain gets involved with that too, because blood flow is no joke. Like it's going to hurt. It's going to suck. Like it burns like hell. So that trains your mental fortitude to push through sets. And that's one thing that I know Steve loves to do, and like challenging your mindset around things, because we have to consider too, this is where I like to change repetition. I like to challenge the body metabolically with intensity and lower reps as well. But I like to touch on all of those so I don't lose the ability of any of them, right? Because as soon as you, there's a saying that we have typically in the fitness world where if you don't use it, you lose it. right? So if I trained, I don't know, hypertrophy here, and then my reps just went down and down and down, well, essentially that I'm training lower reps and strong, but then I lose the essence of hypertrophy here, and it might, then I've got to go back up and train hypertrophy, and all of a sudden I've lost the strength gains I've made from my lower reps. So typically it's like this all the time, like taking longer periods to go through it, whereas I like to touch them every other phase. I'm touching them, so I never really lose the response that I'm trying to train for, you know. So with that in mind, well, now if I'm doing that, and you take your scenario where you're not really losing any of it, you can take 4 days in India and go, what am I really potentially missing? What areas of my training could I really push whilst I've got the time to do it here and I haven't got access to a gym? Or, for example, Thompson might go, well, I need to work on a little bit more of mobility and activations around my hip, right? So he suffers with a little bit of SI stuff, which we're working on right now. So I might say, Thompson, while you're away, there's no gym. This is what we're going to attack for 3 days. Like every day I really want to push this, right? Or it might be, Bill, we're going to do metabolic work and we're really going to push the boundary on the pain threshold that you can tolerate. And here's why. So Steve will probably back me up on this one, and Steve's probably really the kicker for this one too. To send the discharge from the brain to the motor unit, to recruit motor units, to recruit muscle fibers, is something called a corollary discharge. So it's essentially at that neural pathway that fires and fires and fires. And that the stronger you get, the stronger over time you get, the harder and faster that pathway fires up to those motor units. Now, the more fatigue you get, the less that's going to fire. So the more fatigued you are. So that means higher reps, any pain sensation comes in, the brain's going to go, nope. It's going to downregulate it. But you can train pain. You can train to tolerate pain. We had a discussion with one of the leading researchers on hypertrophy on this. And my question, because we were going through, well, what downregulates the brain to send that, the neurological firing down to the motor unit? And it's cardiovascular inefficiency. So anytime you feel burning in the lungs and so on, and you're finding it hard to recover in between sets, the brain's going to go, nope, and downregulates that. So this is why we want to make sure you're fit enough to build muscle, right? That's one aspect. Two, so why Ben's like, you got to do 20 reps now and again, you got to push 30 rep. Yes, you're going to get lean and you're going to burn a lot of calories doing 20, 30 reps, but it's going to suck. So in that moment, it's not optimal for hypertrophy, but what it's training is this, that ability to withstand pain. And when you take those reps away and you start putting the weight on the bar, you're going, no problem. Like this, I've got this, no problem. I could handle another 20 at this point. So we're training pain and sensation so that becoming that monk as you're being a warrior in the gym at that time, which Ben would probably refer to, you're allowing that brain to go, I got it, it's no problem. Fire, fire, fire. I honestly believe you can train that 100%. Steve, I don't know your thoughts on that. I know we spoke to Beasley about it quite a bit, but the more I've thought about it, the more I've programmed it, the more I've seen people really, really benefit from it.
Oh, absolutely. It's actually funny you're saying it, because last night I had a client, her name's Corinne. I've trained her for like 5 years. We were talking about like back training, right? And so she's doing rows and she was saying she has a really hard time getting like a big contraction. I'm like, well, just think what the primary role of a lot of back muscles are, right? Spinal extensors. So I said, like, if you look at what the humerus is doing, he said pretty much the last job is like, it's done. But then we're just getting humeral extension. It's just basically moving the arm. So a bunch of mumbo jumbo. Then she's like, okay, what's the point of it? I'm like, right. So you can basically still contract your lat, but you're thinking this is too painful. And I'm like, it's too painful because you reached your last rep, because I said 10. And so she's like, 10? Oh my God. And you should see her face. She was like red. I'm like, how about instead you just say, okay, I'm here, breathe, contract the lat. And then she did it and she was like five more, because she recognized that she was there. It was just an arbitrary rep count and the pain didn't own her in that moment. She got five more reps and she was like, that's the best set I've ever done on my back. Hands down, ever she'd ever got. I'm like, right, because you still had contractions. But the problem is that you were so here with the pain of 10 reps that you were thinking job is done because I'm in pain. So it's again, why do you fail, right? Why'd you stop?
Yep, 100%. Robert, you just posted a message into the chat, right? Just unmute yourself, man. And just ask that question loud, so I make sure I'm getting it right.
I've just been listening to a fair few podcasts about they've identified that part of the brain that they identified as like that grit part of the brain, and it actually does grow. They've proven, like, you know, with the MRIs, that part of the brain actually grows by doing things that are hard.
Yep.
And that Huberman podcast?
Yeah, Huberman, and I went down a rabbit hole with a few others. You know? Like, that the way that Huberman described it that I loved was doing micro sucks. Like, just do something that is hard each day. And what I found fascinating was it had to be something that was hard for you. So if you're a naturally great runner and running's easy for you, it's not going to get bigger by running. You need to go and lift weights. If you find weights the easy part, maybe you just need to force yourself to do something that is unpleasant, hard. So it's, you know, the cold showers, the pushing extra hard on longer reps or higher, or something that's unusual and different to sort of shock your brain.
Yep. I mean,
next time.
One of Huberman's guests, and this has been like written books on it, but like you're all familiar with David Goggins, right? So like, that's a prime example of somebody that's just doesn't quit. And he labels it callous in the brain or callousing your mind, right? So every time you get to that point where it's like, you got to stop. At that point, like his actual words are, when you get to that point where your body thinks it's got to give in, you've got 40% left. 40%. Like, that's insane, right? So I've been there in set, like even in the gym in sets with Ben, where I'm thinking I'm literally going to die. And he gets another 5 to 10 reps out of me. Like, I don't know how I do it, but it can be done. And it's not until you experience that that you realize how much more you can give. But the other aspect is you realize you've never trained a muscle to failure. And this is the difference between true mechanical tension and true muscular growth. And the difference within the trenches training and pushing your body to the limit that it can take. And research studies saying you can't recover from X, Y, and Z. That's the problem. So this is where I think when we're looking at research and like not based on your research you just spoke about right now, Rob, but I'm talking about some of the hypertrophy research that we look at. I'm looking at who's the research done on, how long have they been training, what's their experience level like? Because they say trained individuals. I'm like, no, no way. Like nobody's, no, I'm not saying nobody, but you look at the people that do the studies, there's no way they've trained, let's say, for a year into the type of training that we do for 1 year. It's always, I've done 3 sets of 10 on leg extension for 6 weeks. That's not a trained individual. Like, we've taken some guys in the gym that have come to muscle camps. They've been, like, even professional bodybuilders come in and Ben's teaching them how to do a leg extension. It's wild, you know? So we take it onto that level and we go, well, there's research that can guide you, allow it to give you questions that you want to ask more of, and okay, let me see what this does with this type of rep scheme or rep method and so on, and how are my clients going to respond to this type of stuff, right? So, and then we look at the individual and go, well, that's not appropriate for Scott, that might not be appropriate for Thompson, right? And then we have to have levels of why I'm programming something. So I always, when just so you get a picture of what my mind goes through when I program, I look at where somebody is now for sure, but then I'm like, well, I need to think 12 months ahead. And if I think 12 to 24 months ahead, I know, well, from this point here, I know exactly what you're going to do in 12 weeks. And after that 12 weeks, I know exactly what you're doing in the next 12 weeks based off how you're responding. And I'll manipulate things in between as well. That's the difference, right? Another example would be Greg next week. I trained with Greg this week. Anybody on a call with Greg last week or the week before? Yeah, we're going to come to your question in a second as well around nutrition, because I've just seen that in the chat too. Speaking about Greg and nutrition. So I trained legs with Greg today and he's getting stronger. We're doing good. We push each other. If he wasn't there, we probably wouldn't have got another rep out each. We tend to push each other. But we finished up on the leg extension today, the last quad exercise. And we had stacked it. And the only way I could get, without doing 25 reps, I had to drop the weight down to around just over half the stack, and then I had to do one leg. So the only way I could really get the stimulus that I wanted was to go unilateral, right? So that's one way. I was like, right. And I was watching Greg, and I'm giving him shit here, and he's gonna give me some shit tomorrow when he watches this back. But he did one leg, and he did like 7 reps, and he took like nearly 2 minutes to start his other leg. So what am I thinking? Greg's doing 20 reps next week. We need to start conditioning Greg up. And he's like, oh, I'm telling him what we're going to do. We're like, we got to do 20 reps. We got to get your muscle conditioned. We need to have to give you the ability, because it's muscle specific. So with Greg's training now, how many times a week could I train his body parts to be more metabolic? How much can he recover? What's his lifestyle going to be like? How much cardiovascular work is he going to have? Then I've got to think about, well, his son wakes up a few times a night and he doesn't sleep as optimally as possible either. So, Bill, you were talking about your little ones waking up as well. Like, Greg goes through this a few times a week. So now we've got to really manage. Maybe full body training at higher repetitions is going to be better for Greg here, because now I'll do 3 days a week. So he's not going in 5 days a week where he's got to wake up at like 2, 3 a.m. and just stay up and just do work as his son is awake, right? So if I force him to do 5 days a week, what's going to happen to his training output? If he's not recovering, his training output's going down. So now I'm matching the program to his actual lifestyle. So I can still get the 20 reps that I want, but now I'm giving him 3 days per week, full body training split. So now he's getting more muscular frequency hit. So he still gets stimulated hypertrophy. He's still getting the metabolic output that I want. And now I can give him more cardiovascular training, which is more recovery based. So I can give him zone 2 work. So now I'm not stressing him out so much, and he might be able to get a little bit better quality sleep before some wakes him up again, you know? So that's just to give you some insights into like thinking, well, how many days a week can I commit and really maximize what I do and recover from it? Right. So Scott is on the call tonight, and we're currently doing 3 days a week full body training, which you're starting to enjoy a little bit more, Scott, right now. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't use me as an example right now just because I'm recovering from a few things, like a slight sinus
sure.
and a the Songwriters Festival I was at for 3 days. It set me back. But yes, anecdotally, over the years, multiple full body workouts seem to work really well for me, whether that's psychological or physical or both, I'm not sure, but it just works better than hitting the muscle group fewer times a week.
Yep, 100%, mate, 100%. So we see how like the body responds in different ways, and it's in certain parts of your life, you're gonna do better with different splits as well. You're going to have more time to do it. You're going to have more time to do it. Again, me and Greg talk about things when we're training. And like, remember when we were younger, we just come to the gym all energized and we had nobody waking us up in the middle of the night. And like, remember those days, Gavin? I'm like, yep, they were fun, man. They were fun. But kids are a big joy as well. So I don't mind waking up in the night with my kids and being there as a dad, and I'm sure Greg does too, but it's a different lifestyle, man. You got to adapt to that type of stuff, but be very smart about how much you're putting to that training session and knowing when to put more recovery things in place. Because if you're getting your ass kicked in work, there's a lot of life stress going on. I've got currently working with a client right now that he's going through so much in all in one hit. I'm like, wow, like how this guy's still moving forward and actually getting to the gym is impressive. Like his ability to keep getting into the gym, but I think it's more so for his mindset to really keep him focused on something else with what's going on right now. So that's good. But as a coach, I'm like, I need to make sure he's recovering now, because if he digs a bigger hole, it's going to take him longer to get out of it. So this is where I got to manage the amount of volume I give him, the amount of intensity he goes at. Right. So typically, if you're doing full body training approach, you're not going to be able to do massive amounts of volume because you're going to hit every muscle in that workout. So you can't give it like 5 sets for everything. You'll be there for 3 hours. Do you know what I mean? So the sets have to come down, which means we've got to be very specific with how much intensity we're going to give. Is it 2 all out sets per body part? And then we hit that multiple times per week. If it's two, if it's two sessions per week, you can start to think about, okay, well, I'm going to hit it from 3 to 6 hard working sets per muscle group across the week. So then you're looking at about anywhere from 6 to 9, 10 sets across the week. But we're talking hard working sets, right? So anything where you're leaving reps in reserve, you might need more sets to accumulate the work volume that you need for the response that you want, right? And that's where the skill acquisition comes in for full body training too. So notice you might not go to full muscular failure when you're learning something. So Dez is working squats, right? And Dez was saying that he was hitting squats 3 times a week in some way. But I can probably guarantee he's not going to muscular failure on every set on that. Because if you're learning a skill, what allows you to learn that sequence more is this. This big thing in your head is called the brain. And it keeps building blueprints. Every time you improve that pattern, you build a new blueprint of that pattern and it gets better and better and better. If I take you to muscular failure and it hurts and you get tired, what happens to the pathways that they're going down to the motor units and the brain blueprint shuts off, right? So you don't learn it as well. So we want to stay away from failure if you're learning any type of movement. And when you get very good at it, then we're going to lock it in and kick your ass with it. Then we can take it closer, you know. But if you're going to learn something, you need that multiple times a week like Dez is doing, right? So that's where you might be like squatting 3 times a week and learning that pattern. And you might do higher reps at it, but you're leaving reps in reserve. It's like learning how to play the piano or learning a new language. The more frequently you do that, you do that, you're going to learn it way faster than doing it once a week, right? So there's a lot of little nuances to these things, but again, it's going to come to where are you on your goals? What are you working towards? What is your lifestyle allowing for this to happen, right? And then allowing us to take reins on those programs and go, Steve, I got this coming up. I'm going to India, right? So I got 4 days off. Like I've got a shitty little gym. There's 4 days here that I'm there for. Can we maximize it? This is all I've got. What can we do for hypertrophy if my goal is hypertrophy? Or what else can we work on whilst I'm there? So it might be, if Greg's going to India, Greg's doing cardio because I know he needs to do his cardio. So I might maximize his cardio sessions whilst he's there and put little circuits in, get him doing some runs, get him doing some bike work. You might hate me for it, but he's gonna benefit from it further down the line, you know. Good. Any questions, boys?
We got another question, but I think John had a question about nutrition. I think you were going to get to.
Yeah, let's touch on John, and then we'll come back to you, Bill.
No, you were talking about what we struggled with, like in terms of travel. And, yeah. And for me, it's like a lot of my work is in the evening and I've got to get through rush hour in Chicago, which is unpredictable. And sometimes I think I have time to eat and I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're in Chicago, you say, is it music in the evenings you're doing?
Yeah, I'm a professional musician.
Yeah. So obviously, depending on where you're staying relative to the hall that you're going to be playing in, right? So
it's not that I'm staying overnight. It's that I've got a, sometimes an hour trip will be 2.5 hours. And I think I'll get there soon enough so I can get in a meal when I finish driving before rehearsal and I don't have time.
Yeah. So it's a funny, we always bring this up on when we're teaching myself and Ben, but anytime we travel, we've always got bags of beef jerky and protein bars in our bag. Always, without fail.
Yeah, I always have protein bars in my car, but it's not always.
Yeah, so it's a funny thing. I typically leave the beef jerky until the day that I'm going, because I pass a service station on the way to the airport, and I always pick up the beef jerky there, and my bag is full when I get on the plane. Uh-huh. I'll typically not eat plane food when I'm on the plane, and if I then do get, I'll typically fast, but if I really do need something to eat, then I'll go the beef jerky there if I need it, you know? So it might be things like that where if you get your meal, great. You eat your meal as normal. And then the beef jerky is not really going to lose a sell-by date to that quickly. And you still got beef jerky then to snack on here.
And I don't know if Greg told you, I had the rotator cuff surgery 6 weeks ago.
Okay.
So we're doing unilateral training on this side and I can't really carry much on this side. It's getting better. but
So he's doing, so was it the, which rotator cuff?
it was my left supraspinatus.
Okay. Yeah, it's a
It
bit
was a
of a suck.
total tear,
Yeah.
and it was retracted. But I'm on 157 and TB 500 to help the recovery process.
Right. Are you doing injectable or oral
I'm
or
doing
both?
injectable.
Okay. Are you injecting to the site or just subcutaneous?
Subcutaneous by the abs.
Okay. I'm actually taking some myself right now. I'm doing injectable, and I'm also doing around five caps, so 200 micrograms, around a milligram a day of oral as well. So I've had a little bit of a bicep tendonitis, and literally within 3 days, it's like nothing. So mine's just a tendonitis. Yours is going to obviously be a full-on surgery, right? So it's going to take a little bit of time.
Yes, yeah, so I've been at it. Today was the end of the 6 week. Tomorrow's the end of the 6 week, and he's got me on 2 more weeks.
Perfect. Okay, keep running that. Then obviously, he's going to program in obviously some mobility stuff in there for you too, but obviously strengthening the other rotator cuffs around that shoulder joint too, to create more stability, to create that active range of motion in there as well.
Yeah,
So he's
we're
probably.
doing a lot of stuff on the right side, and then leg extension and leg curl stuff and split squats
Okay.
and all tempo.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of tempo work in there for sure. I'll sit with Greg and go through a lot of stuff and start planning out a few things. Make sure the program's looking nice and sexy for you, man. And we'll get you back to CrossFit as soon as we can.
Think it'll be a while before CrossFit. I got to build strength up first, but I have a call with Greg in the morning.
Good, man. Well, tell him what time's your call with him tomorrow.
It's 8:30 Central Time, so I think it's like 1:30, 2:30 your time in the afternoon.
I'll speak to him tomorrow.
I've got a question on your lateral raises. You're using like an elbow cuff on the video that's in the demonstration. And I found wrist cuffs online that I might order because I find I really tire with the weight. Is that elbow cuff better?
The ones that I had, the reason they go further up my arm is just they're really thick and they're really wide. So you can
Okay.
get ones that are small and stay around here, but these ones are pretty thick and wide, so they tend to travel up my arm a little bit. But then because that's where it's, let's say for example, the attachments here on my forearm, that means the moment arm's a little bit shorter then. So I could probably do a little bit more load and get, or maybe get a couple more reps out there. So you can have, but so I do actually have both. I've got a smaller set of cuffs where they'll only fit around my wrist, and then sometimes I'll go with the larger ones, and they'll go up my arm a little bit more, and that'll shorten
And
it.
do you have a preference between the two?
I like the thicker ones, man. They just feel more sturdy and more stable.
Okay.
So yeah, so I think the, is it Bear? I'm sure it's like Bear something, the maker or the brand of them. But I'll take a photograph tomorrow, and I'll send it over to Greg to send you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Bill.
Yeah, so my question is oddly specific. So I'm going to sign up for an obstacle course race for 6 miles near Chicago, if anybody's interested, with a weight vest. So it's a 6 mile run with 30 different obstacles. And so as I'm building up my endurance, I'm also looking at my grip strength. And as you're talking about building strength and hypertrophy for different muscle groups, 2 to 3 times a week and hitting those, I'm struggling to figure out how do I track that specifically for my forearms to optimize my grip strength over the next, 3 or 4 months to make sure that I'm ready to tackle those obstacles?
Yep.
Is
Good
there
question.
some, because there's a lot of, your grip is involved in so many things. I have a hard time figuring out, am I increasing? Am I getting enough volume there to try to increase my strength? I'm just trying to figure out if you've got any tips on that specifically.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a big fan of integrate. I'm a big fan of trying to hit two birds with one stone. So that'll time-wise help for sure. So if you're doing any ab work, I like to do hanging ab work where you have to hang from your hands, and obviously you're building up time for the grip. So hanging knee raises will be a great place to start. Then you can do obviously hanging with the legs straight, or you could do holds with the knees up this way, And then you're doing like a leg extension up top there. So you're really, so what you're enabling to do there, obviously you've got your grip strength, but you've also got pelvic stability. So if your knees are being held there, your hip flexors have to work to keep your legs in place, which means your pelvis is stable. Like you're forcing stability of the pelvis. And then as you're performing the leg extensions, you're increasing the moment arm for the pelvic stability even more. And obviously you're creating more quad strength to lengthen the hamstrings as well. So it's like there's quite a few birds you're hitting with that just that one exercise. So that's one that I do like to build endurance in the grip. But then it also goes to, well, what specifically is the grip going to be utilized for? So if I'm doing anything here, it's going to build endurance for sure, but that's like position specific too. So if you've got to do farmer's carries as part of an obstacle, like on a Hyrox event, then at some point I want you to be holding weight by the side of your body. Because obviously you're going to have to handle more load potentially in that position and then potentially carry for distance too. So there's a couple of things that I use. Like you can definitely do that with farmer's walks, build that up. But if you've got anything like RDLs or rack pulls or anything like that in the program, I like to, after I've done those lifts, I've obviously worked my grip. You can do it before as well. There's no reason why you couldn't do it before, because essentially you could work the grip beforehand, then add straps afterwards once your grip fatigues. That's a good way to start things. Leave the straps out until you really need them for the load of, let's say, the posterior chain if you're doing a rack pull. So in accumulation phases, so if I'm doing volume, let's say for example, I'm doing my rack deadlifts. I'll finish the rack deadlift, all my sets, and then I'll do sets of grip work. So what I'll typically do is I'll in the volume phases, I'll hold for time. So whatever that load is, it might be 20, 30 second holds. Drop the weight, set one, take my rest, boom, pick it up again, 20, 30 seconds, whatever it is. Then with that same weight, my goal is going to be, can I do 5 to 10 seconds more the next session? Or if I've given myself a target of like 30 seconds and I've maxed it, then I'm going to add 5% in the bar. So progressive overload in that nature. And typically what I'll do when the load is going to be intensified, so like the reps are lower and I'm doing a rack pull from a different range, then typically what I'll do, the weight's heavier, so that means I'll hold the bar after my rack pulls, I'll hold the bar for 6 seconds. I'll drop it down, rest 3 seconds. Boom, pick it back up, hold 6 seconds, back down. So I'll do clusters. So it might be that I'm doing 6 reps of 6 second holds, but the load is going to be way heavier than my previous phase. So I'm building strength in this one and endurance in this one. And then as I then do the next two phases, so the next block, the weight is typically going to be heavier than the first block anyway. So I'm building strength, volume, and endurance in the grip as well as the rack pull or whatever lift I'm trying to improve. Does that make sense, Bill?
Yeah, it does. So when I'm doing those different types of things, obviously, I'm trying to integrate those with different things. Like, okay, I'm going heavier on, reverse grip barbell rows, bent over barbell rows, or just, and I did it more yesterday where I'm, it's weird, trying to focus more on the actual grip, like just squeezing the heck out of the bar. And I was super tired afterwards. I was like, paying attention, makes a difference. But as long as I can do that a couple of times a week, I think that that should get me where I need to go. Because there will be some farmer's carries. There's going to be some, monkey bars, different types of things to hang on to. And I just can't today. I can't grab onto a 2-inch bar and just hang there with one hand. So that's something I know that over the next 4 months I need to improve. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to make that.
So that hanging knee raise is going to be great. The other thing you can do to end a session, which I love, is to the transition then towards one arm. You can start here and then you need to start moving the arms. So let me just see if you can see my hands up here a little bit. So let's say I'm holding the bar here and it helps the, I'm not saying you got to do this straight away, John, but this will help your rotator cuffs eventually down the line once you can do this type of stuff. Hold, one, two, three, and you're going out maybe four or five movements and then you come back in. And all you're doing is that for time. So it might be 40 to 60 seconds that you're doing in and out. And your rotator cuffs get boom lit up and your grip is working hard. So that's one you can add in towards the end of the session. So it's a modified dead hang.
Cool.
Good, man. Jeffrey, how are things for you, man? Have you got any questions based on today's info?
No, man, I'm taking notes. All new stuff. Love it.
Good, brother. Robert, all good with yourself, mate? Fantastic. Paul, all good, mate. Any questions from you today? All good. We on the right track for you. Everything going well? Scott, I know you've booked in for a call with me next week, mate. I can't wait. I missed you, mate. Good to speak to you. Jeffrey, I hope the drive's going well. Thanks for tuning in, man. I know you're obviously on your way somewhere, but it's good to see you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. That was interesting. That was really good. I
No
appreciate
problem.
it.
Always as well, man. Like, use the group. If there's anything that comes up for you later on today that we covered on this call, I know we've covered lifestyle and different types of splits and how to change things or a thought process around changing things based off what happens in your lifestyle. So obviously we have to plan with like, what is my normal lifestyle? So we plan around that. But I wanted to cover today is yes, we make sure we lock that in. And typically if you're obviously working with your coach, that'll be locked in anyway. But then it's always having that thought process around, well, if I do go somewhere like Bill's gone to India, John has stuff where he goes to Chicago. I know Scott has two different gyms. So he's got one in one place that he lives and he goes to another place. So he got two different gyms and he chooses different exercise in those gyms. And we communicate and we say, right, perfect. That's okay. Hit the reps on this. So we got plan A's and plan B's. So don't worry about saying to your coach, look, I need another plan for where I need to go. Like that's what we're here for. So always communicate with your coach on that. Any support you need around travel or anything that comes up that you think, I can't stick my plan, this isn't going to work, we'll make it work. That's what we're here for. That's what we want to support you with. Especially for me, writing program. I love writing programs. I know probably Steve does as well. It's one of those little things that we enjoy as coaches. Like, well, what are we going to not thrash you with, but challenge you with, let's say, because we want to see you improve. We enjoy that. Like, I definitely enjoy that type of stuff. And I love to see people getting strong and achieving what they set out to achieve, right? So it's a big opportunity for us to communicate more with you. You let us know what you need, and we'll step in and tweak any of the plans that we need to tweak, you know.
Can I just
But no
shout out
problem.
there? I got some great support from Andrew over the Christmas break. So I was going camping with the family, and that would normally be one of those times where I go, I've got four young kids, I'm in a tent. I'm just not going to be able to get anything done, but I really wanted to maintain some of that tempo. And I spoke to Andrew in advance, and we looked at what I had around the house that I could take, and I had a 20-kilo kettlebell, I had a slam ball, and I had some TRX bands, and he just developed some full body workouts. I had a TRX band hanging off a tree at the back of the tent, slam ball, kettlebell,
Love it.
probably 30, 45 minutes of all body workout that he's programmed in. And then I was just doing a zone two, sort of hour long walk before get up early and go for a long walk before the kids got up on the other days. And it just let me keep that was between Christmas and New Year's, rather than sort of having a dead week there, just get something going. And you spoke about that mentality before, which is just sort of challenging my own narrative that if I couldn't get into a gym and do a really good solid workout, it wasn't worth doing anything at all. And I just my calories were then up for the day, so I was still in a deficit. I got the exercise in, so I felt good. And yeah, it was just awesome. And Andrew was just so fantastic. He's just saying, cool, what have you got? When are you going to be away for? What are you trying to do? And I came through with that, which was fantastic.
Now, I get the same when I go to, I've got a family place in Italy and I'm in southern Italy and there's pretty much no gyms there. Like, and I'm in the countryside where my home is. So I've actually taken like TRX rings over there, which I have Olympic rings. And I've got a set of those adjustable dumbbells that do actually, to be fair, they go to like about 70 pounds. So they go pretty high, but it's at that point where for that 2 to 3 weeks that I'm there, sometimes I'm there for a month, sometimes, that I'll just focus on circuit-based training because I never do it. Like, and it's brutal. Like, absolutely brutal. Like, I know John does CrossFit. I'm like, pfft. To be fair, when you're doing the workout, it sucks, but you feel phenomenal afterwards. Like, really, really good. So I challenge myself when I'm there. I'm like, I'm not even going to try and find a gym. I'm going to really focus on things that I don't do at home and just challenge myself in a different way. And now I'll share a little win with you boys that I've had this past week. I'll save it to last. So last week, my wife and my daughter, they were out for the evening at the theater. And I'm chatting my son about a few things. He's like, Dad. And he was learning about Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know why they were talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger in school, but he's like, who's Arnold Schwarzenegger? I was like, let me tell you about Arnold, son. So we watched Pumping Iron. And then we watched, I don't know if you guys have seen it. You probably have. Ben's video, the debut at his first. So it's a documentary on his first Mr. Olympia. So we watched those back to back. And I come off the team call yesterday. We have a coaching call with the coaches Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I came off the call yesterday and he's in my gym in the garden and he's doing chin-ups. He's doing bicep curls and I'm like, right, yes, here we go. This is, has anybody seen the meme? I think it's on like social media at the minute where I think it's Leonardo DiCaprio. And he said, when you hear this noise coming out of your son's bedroom when he's a teenager, yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy. And he's like crying in the background, like, this is it, this is happening, and I'm gonna train my son. Like I'm going through that moment right now. So I think I found myself a little training partner. So when I do go to Italy, then we can train together, you know? So that's your goal, Robert. Get your kids involved. Get those heart the lungs pumping with the kids as well, mate. It's even better.
How old is your son?
He's 12 this year. So he's just turned 11. He was 11 in October. He's coming up 12.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Turning.
So he's starting to tell me today, my muscles feel sore, but I think it's growing, Dad. I think it's growing. I'm like, one session in, he's growing muscle. I'm like, oh, I wish it was that easy, son. I don't want to deflate him too soon. I'm just going to let him grow. All good. Boys, I want to thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate seeing you all. If there's anything we can do for you through the week at all, obviously post questions in the group. That's what we're there for. Communicate. And have a great week ahead and a great weekend, boys. Good to see you all.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.